8 a.m. having arrived, I'm going to call the Committee on Taxes to order and welcome everyone. Members, we do have a couple statewide levy bills today. And those bills in the past have been heard both in taxes and in property taxes. And so, the statewide levy has a general fund impact where, other types of levies we talk about in property taxes just have local government type influence. Also, when you talk about, things that have influence on the general fund like homestead credit state refund or the local government aid and so forth, those apply down local property taxes, and this deals with a statewide tax. So it's been done in both. But in lieu of that, we've invited any property tax division members to join us today. They will not be able to vote, not that we may vote on any one issue, but they may participate in any of the discussion and sit up here at the table. So Representative Hertaus, welcome. Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Very good. So we do have a quorum now. So before we go further, I would like to approve the February 27th, 2019 minutes. Do I hear a motion to approve? Representative Les Legarde moves to approve the February 27th, 2019 minutes. Any discussion? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on those minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails, and the minutes of February 27th are approved. So we're going to move to agenda item number one, and Representative Les Legarde is making his way down and also passing out goodies. And while he's doing that, Representative Les Legarde was not the only one who has introduced the bill and that we have possession of that dealt with this exclusion on the statewide property tax. Representative Hertaus has one that takes it to $200,000. Representative Lewick has one that takes it to $500,000, and Representative Chung from this committee also has one that deals with refunds. So there's some other ones out there. We're hearing this one that does the $150,000. But I do want to, for the record, note that there are others that do have bills similar to this. So with that, Representative Les Legarde, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair. I would like to move 1435.
Representative Les Legarde moves House File 1435 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill, and you do?
Mr. Chair, I would also like to move A1 amendment, and that is to prevent any.
Representative Les Legarde has moved the A1 amendment. Please explain what that amendment does.
What this does is it prevents any shift going to any other business. So this is just a straight tax cut.
Very good. Any other discussion or questions on the A1 amendment? Hearing none, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail, and the A1 amendment is adopted. All right. Representative Les Legarde, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This bill will provide a targeted tax break to small businesses in Minnesota that could use our help. In 2017, when Representative Davis was the chair of the tax committee, the legislator enacted a tax break for these businesses, excluding the first $100,000 of their market value from taxation. This bill would increase the exclusion to $150,000 of the market value. While this bill will not provide tax cuts to every business in the state, it would make a big difference to a lot of small businesses spread throughout Minnesota. To make sure that no business pays an increase in tax, as amended, the bill would reduce the state general levy to ensure that no shifts onto other businesses with more value would occur. In all, it would be more than $20 million in tax cuts for small businesses. And coming from rural Minnesota and greater Minnesota and small businesses, this would mean a lot to us. So I'm very happy to present this bill, and I would entertain any questions, Mr. Chair and members.
Very good. Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we just need to correct for the record the
representative said this will not give a tax cut to every business in Minnesota, but I believe indeed it will. Maybe Mr. Klayman or someone can help out.
Mr. Swanson?
Mr. Chair and members, so what this bill would do is hold the rate constant. So after the exclusion, the amendment.
That's the next bill.
That's the bill that increases taxes dramatically.
That's the next bill.
Yeah.
So.
No, I mean, so.
Well, go ahead. Finish up there.
So what the bill does is it reduces the actual levy amount in proportion to the change in the tax base, so that any business that's still paying the tax after the exclusion is increased is held harmless with this bill.
So, Chair Davids, I think you're right, and I don't know if Representative
Sigard,
if you read that right or if that was meant, but I would think that every business would see a tax cut from that $100,000 to $150,000 market value range.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You are right on that.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, unless the business is worth less than $100,000.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's correct. Change there. That's correct. Representative Fabian, did you?
Well, Mr. Chair, an important clarification, and you guys are a lot smarter than I am on this, but what about if the – I know you are. I admit that. But what about if the business doesn't have a storefront? What if it's just somebody who's a over-the-road salesman? You know, they're an independent contractor.
Yeah.
So I'm just – I heard what Representative Listergaard said, and I hear what the body's saying, but I just want to be clear on that. So.
Yeah, Representative Fabian, there would have to be property taxes being paid.
Yep.
Right. Representative Pertas.
Right, that's what I mean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Luz Lagarde, to join me in the fight to reduce the state general levy. As you may recall, this was a temporary tax imposed more than a decade ago, nearly two decades ago. And the circumstances with our state finances are not in crisis, and it is something that needs to go away. I've always maintained, and I've been in this fight since I arrived here, spearheading efforts to reduce the state general levy, because in rural Minnesota, if you don't have a downtown, you don't have a town. And what we've done with the exclusion in the past is fully capture it so that it's not shifted to other businesses. And it's important to note when we're looking at this that there are about 122,000 CI properties all across the state. 50% of them are located in rural Minnesota, and about the other half are in metro. So there's kind of an even distribution in terms of the numbers of CI properties. Obviously, the highest values are in the metro area. Also, it's important to know that of all of those 122,000, about 50% of them are valued at 500,000 or less. So this is a big deal for small town Minnesota, and I can relate to it. I can give you some specific examples. Personally, I have some CI property that is just a vacant lot, but it's commercial, and it's valued at $500,000. And that state general levy adds about 38% to the cost of the property taxes, bringing the total bill to $15,000 a year for just sitting there, not demanding any fire or police or any other services. So this is a big deal for rural Minnesota, and thank you for bringing that forward.
I know we have some testifiers, so at this point, if anyone would care to testify for or against House File 1435 as amended, and I know Ms. Cadoon, I think, is first on the list. And then we have Mr. Cadenat would be next. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name and provide your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We're here to speak in support of Representative Listlegard's bill, certainly the amendment. We really appreciate the amendment that actually is reducing the statewide levy. I think this is a great continuation of those 2017 reforms where we had a levy reduction. as well, really recognizing that this is a high fixed cost of doing business in the state of Minnesota. This is a regressive tax that we're looking to reduce. I know you had some great testimony from nonpartisan staff on the statewide business property tax and looked at like the 50-state property tax comparison study on how Minnesota compares with other states. And it's really that state levy that does push our taxes, because it amounts to about 28% of any business property tax bill is the state levy. So we think it's important to continue to reduce that tax. As I mentioned, that 50-state property tax comparison study that does show that Minnesota does have some of the highest tax property taxes in the nation. We're second highest in rural Minnesota as compared to other states. If you look at like a $1 million property, I think our tax under that study was about $34,000. You could look at a comparable property in North Dakota would be about $10,000. So a tremendous difference with some of our bordering communities as well. That same property, just to give you a sense of how high we are compared to other states, in California, we rank second highest. They rank like 44th in the nation. So their tax in California even is much less than we impose in our business community. So we do appreciate that state levy reduction. We just also would encourage you, we've always had concerns over this approach of increasing the market value exclusion. We think a much more straightforward and equitable approach would be just to reduce the state levy. That way every property in the state for the state levy would have the same reduction in the proportion of the tax being paid. We do know that many small businesses are actually tenants in larger properties, and so they would not see the same reduction that maybe some small businesses and more on those standalone properties would. But thank you. We do appreciate the bill to reduce the state levy.
Thank you very much. Next testifier, please, and on deck is Mr. Lewis.
Good morning. My name is Phil Catnow. I'm a commercial real estate developer at Opus and here representing the National Association of Industrial and Office Properties. And kind of on behalf of the commercial real estate industry, we do want to echo what Ms. Cadoon's testimony was and that we applaud your efforts and really appreciate the awareness that needs to be paid for the keeping Minnesota competitive as it pertains to the commercial real estate industry and continuing to allow businesses to thrive, because at the end of the day, as businesses continue to grow, they are just an economic engine multiplier for our economy. I guess the only thing I'd want to maybe slightly articulate different is as it relates to this specific item as on increasing the exemption is what it can – The unintentional secondary impact is that you can start to distort the market and you can start to pick unintentionally winners and losers. Said maybe another way, as Ms. Cadoon pointed out, you could have a business owner in a large office building that is a coffee supplier, for instance. This impact will not be as profound as it relates to their overall operating costs, because it's a pass-through in the state of Minnesota for their proportionate share of taxes, as it would if you had a standalone business that was valued hypothetically at $100,000 or $150,000 under this approach, that would be in a tax-exempt type environment. And the secondary also that I'd point out is that it could unintentionally discourage landlords for investing in their property, because it will just have a binary impact on increasing the valuation of the property. So I'd like to strongly encourage the governmental officials here to look at lowering the levy uniformly, because all benefit, as opposed to the approach of going on the bottom end and providing that exemption simply because of those unintended secondary consequences. Obviously, we will continually applaud all efforts to make business taxes more friendly. We would just caution that this approach could have some unintended consequences that I think the audience should be made aware of. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lewis, and then Ms. Larson's on deck. Please proceed and state your name.
Thank you. I'm Kevin Lewis, and I'm the Executive Director of BOMA, the Building Owners and Managers Association of Greater Minneapolis, but I'm here also representing the BOMA Coalition. So we have representation in Duluth, Rochester, Mankato, St. Cloud, and other areas. And I'll just echo a couple of thoughts here. First, we endorse, of course, the reduction of the state levy and the CI property tax. But You know, when I talk about our members, they do own and manage the commercial office buildings, but we're really here to talk about the tenants that you've already heard a couple different times that they are the ones that are paying the CI statewide property tax. And so just to provide a little color as to who the tenants are, yes, it could be a 400-person law firm or ad agency or corporation, but it could be a 10-person company, a 5-person. My office, there's four of us in a 2,000-square-foot office. So to look at, we're a not-for-profit, too, the real scope of the type of tenants that occupy these buildings. The first thing is that the having the exemption in place does pit one side of one building versus the other across the street. You might have a 100,000 valued building on one side of the street and the 400,000 one across the other side of the street. It could be two brothers, two sisters that own those, but it would be a different rate for those tenants that are being paid. We don't think that's a wise decision, that it really doesn't balance the field as it should be. So again, I'll echo on some of what my associates have stated before, that we're looking to not only make it for all tenants across the state of Minnesota more affordable, something that we can grow business throughout the state, the Twin Cities area, and the entire region. So with that, I appreciate the time, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lewis. Ms. Larson. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I apologize. I wasn't on the list. I didn't know if I was going to be able to be here. Jill Larson, Minnesota Business Partnership. Won't repeat what everybody else said. I want to thank the author. We do appreciate the amendment. Our original concern was that it was going to shift onto other properties. Our concern with this trend of increasing the exemption is that it moves the state levy further and further toward being just a metro area property tax, and that's a concern for us just in terms of equity. So again, we would prefer that the levy be reduced overall. Appreciate the intent, and as was mentioned, there are a lot of small companies and big buildings, including a lot of startups that I know that the legislature wants to encourage to start and grow here. So thanks for listening.
Thank you very much. Is there any other people from the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 1435 as amended? Very good. Back to members. Representative Carlson. Representative Pertoss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Carlson. What I said is, in terms of the numbers of CI properties, about half of them are valued under 500,000, and about half are valued above 500,000. Then with regard to the distribution of the total numbers of businesses, there's about half in rural Minnesota and half in greater Minnesota. And the three rules of real estate are...
Metro.
So the three rules of real estate are location, 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 and what you have is you can pick up your home in Crystal, and you can move it out into Dilworth, Minnesota, and it'll have a much different value than it is in the metro. The same is true for businesses, and so what you do tend to see, and what one of the testifiers had, is that a greater number of high-valued properties are in the metro area.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson
clarifies that although I fully understand the location, location issue. I moved my home to Crystal, Plymouth, a few years ago. I was told it would increase in value by $50,000. I said, well, that's interesting. The same county, same school district, but a different city. But it was the location, apparently, that would drive it. That was the Crystal tax guru for the city. But at any rate, thank you for the information.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Hertoff.
And Representative Carlson, if you had not removed all those walnut trees, you'd have higher value backyard.
Representative.
We had a conversation about trees.
We have. We have. Very good. Any other comments or questions of the author? Seeing none, Representative Les Legarde, any closing comments on House File 1435 as amended?
Just that it's not a, it, obviously it's not a fix-all, but I think there's a consensus that, that it will make a difference for a lot of small communities and a lot of small businesses. So I think that that is the intent, and I'm very happy to bring this forward, and I would ask for your support.
Very good. Representative Les Legarde renews his motion to lay over House File 1435 as amended for the tax omnibus bill. Thank you very much, Representative. We now have House File 1410, Representative Gomez.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Well, Representative Gomez is getting there. Yesterday we had a conversation about Girl Scout cookies and which were the best. I think that the cookies we had this morning are the best, so maybe we can have a show of hands. No, I'm kidding.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. It is certainly Girl Scout cookie time of the season, and they're all very good. I just, my preferences are the lemons, so I just really, I can't, you can't beat those lemon ones. So.
And the chairman always
wins. So, Representative Gomez, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to move that House File 1410 be considered for inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you very much. And before I have you explain the bill, I'm going to ask Mr. Swanson just to talk about the rates and how that applies on the commercial industrial statewide tax. Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and members, you should have within the packet for this bill, a handout that says state general property tax at the top. It has a little history and background on the state general tax. And then at the bottom of the page, there is a section on the rate calculation. So just to walk through a little bit how this rate is calculated and a little bit of history along with the rate. When the state general levy was first established, it was actually one levy amount that was paid by seasonal residential recreational properties and commercial industrial properties. The tax has gone through a few changes over the years, and after some changes in 2017, what we have in current law today is just a set levy amount for commercial industrial properties and then a separate set levy amount for seasonal residential recreational properties. And at the bottom of that handout, you can see how the rate for each of these two levies is calculated. So for the commercial industrial tax rate, you just take the total commercial industrial levy divided by the total statewide commercial industrial net tax capacity. So this tax is levied on the net tax capacity tax base, which is really just it's a measure of market value of the properties. All of that value gets combined together to form that bottom number, the total statewide CINTC. And that ratio will give you the state general tax rate. And then that rate actually gets applied to each individual property in order to calculate how much tax that property pays.
Very good. And also in the packet, members, you should have a sheet like this from Ms. Schill talking about the state general levy and revenue impacts versus base. So that should also be in your folders. So thank you very much, Mr. Swanson. And Representative Gomez, did you like to explain your bill?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as we were just discussing, you know, the state general property tax was the result of these three factors that are on the sheet that's in your packet that happened as part of property tax reform in 2001. So there was a dramatic reduction in the commercial and industrial class rates as part of what was basically an agreement and a deal that was reached between business, local government, and our schools. Because at that time we were increasing school aid, increasing the CI class rates, and repealing the general education levy. So, you know, we have a, as we all know, we have an obligation to educate our students in Minnesota. We have to pay for things. We have to pay for the educated workforce that helps our business community thrive. We have looming needs in terms of, you know, health care, elder care, many other things that, that tax our general fund. And so this deal that was reached between business, local government, and our schools really implicitly included residential property tax rate payers, because as we know, at least, you know, in my community, and I think in lots, well, you know, the trend over time has been that more and more we're relying less on general fund and more on residential property tax levies to fund our schools. And so when, you know, in 2017, the inflator was repealed, we made a policy decision to shift the responsibility of fulfilling this constitutionally mandated responsibility to educate our students onto other tax sources, whether that's general fund or local property tax levies. You know, we this bill replaces the levy amount with a set rate. It freezes the rate at the current level of 42.4%. And as you see the CI rate kind of trend over time, I mean, it's at its lowest, the lowest that it's been since 2010. So yeah, this is really about ensuring that as our business community thrives, it also, and our commercial industrial sector thrives, it allows our schools also to thrive. And so I am happy to, I know there are people here to testify against my bill, or I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you very much, Representative Gomez. So as members, before I go to testifiers, if you have questions regarding what is in the bill, we could ask that now. Otherwise, as far as discussion, if we could wait until afterwards. But if you have questions right now of what is in the bill, we'll entertain those. Otherwise, we'll move to testifiers. Okay, very good. So let's move to testifiers. And Ms. Cadu. And actually, we have the same order as before. So, so, welcome again to the committee. Please state your name.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadu, and I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We're here with all due respect and strong opposition to Representative Gomez's bill. This would really undo, in fact, those great reforms that occurred in 2017. That was with removing the automatic tax inflator. If you look at the revenue estimate, this is obviously increasing now automatically this tax again. As the revenue estimate shows, it is about a $54 million increase for fiscal years 2021, and then about $170 million increase in 2022-23. As I just mentioned in previous testimony, we already have taxes. This high fixed cost of doing business in Minnesota is already much higher than many other states. This would obviously increase this even more. I would just mention for education funding and other things, businesses pay taxes already at the state, you know, for the local governments, the K-12 system. They pay all those local taxes already. Realize this state levy is on top of all the taxes that they already pay. The business community already pays taxes at higher class rates than any other property. Our effective tax rates are already much higher than any other property. So as I said, this would be in addition to all that. This is also a regressive tax. I want to make sure that's clear as well. That's, as the tax incident study shows, that when you make a change in the tax, that maybe differs in the incident on when the tax is now currently imposed. And what the tax incident study says is a change in the business property tax will fall less on non-residents. It will fall more on Minnesota residents, less on Minnesota owners of capital, and it will fall more on Minnesota consumers and Minnesota labor. So when you're increasing this tax, realize you are increasing a regressive tax. I would also mention that we do want to make sure we're encouraging our businesses to be able to start in Minnesota, grow in Minnesota, and thrive in the state. It's a pretty challenging environment for many of our Minnesota businesses. I think if you look at kind of that changing landscape, with all the increased competition, with online retail and other things. I mean, just look at the paper, and I know this is true not just in Minnesota, but the rest of the country. I mean, look in the paper on all the long-time retail establishments that have been closing, because it is very competitive, and we really don't want to make it harder to do business in the state of Minnesota than it is in any other state. So thank you.
Mr. Doon, thank you very much. So thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome, and please state your name again.
Good morning. My name is Phil Catnaugh, representing the National Association of Office and Industrial Properties. Commissioner Chair, members of the Commission, I appreciate the opportunity again to address this proposed bill. We do respectfully disagree with the approach as it relates to increasing the levy. And while Ms. Cadoon did a great summary of where the taxes get paid, sometimes I think it's good to maybe articulate what we see as practitioners in commercial real estate, where we're dealing with businesses. And they're either tenants in buildings or they're building owners. And it's somewhat of a very similar story every single time we talk with a potential business that's looking to come into Minnesota. They say, we love the educated workforce, we love the strong economy, strong infrastructure, and the quality of life. However, your taxes are borderline punitive, and it's very difficult for us to make the economics work. And I'll use a specific example of a manufacturer that came into Minnesota. We looked at trying to get them in 2017. They did not have the appropriate capital, not only to build their facility, but also to be able to make it work based on their projections as it relates to market penetration and growth. And this manufacturer creates cardboard. Cardboard doesn't seem like it's maybe the most exciting thing in the world, but I can tell you it's a pretty sophisticated operation that they run, where they bring rail cars in with big sheets of paper and outspits a whole bunch of cardboard. And with six beautiful little kids that I have, every single time we have a birthday, I look in my garage and I see how much Amazon boxes are out there, and I don't think cardboard's going away anytime soon. So here's an organization that's willing to come into Minnesota. They're going to create upwards of 75 jobs, but they could not make the math work, and it was mainly because of the taxes. And at the end of the day, they spent a fair amount of time talking with us as the developer to say, why should we not just go to Wisconsin and be able to run our business there, because the cardboard can ship just as easily as it can in Minnesota. We had a rail-served site. We were able to provide a very competitive solution with a combination of the rail suppliers as well as what we could get our basis for the land in to ultimately deliver them a facility that, candidly, they ended up shrinking because of the fact that they were worried about being able to make all of the economics work. So there is the ability at some point to expand, but I think if you were to distill it down to the one driving factor that prevented them from, I think, reaching their maximum potential for what they ultimately wanted to do for their market penetration, was the fact that the taxes and the cost of doing business for them was difficult for them to make work for the economics. The margins on something like cardboard are razor thin, and this is, for them, an investment that they're making. That's a long-term investment. To put it in perspective, the cost of everything that we did for them was less than the cost of all of the equipment and the machinery that went inside of the building. So here's a group that came into Minnesota, made a substantial commitment to coming into Minnesota, but at the end of the day, it was a year and a half later than it wanted to be, and it was less than it could have been because of those factors. So I would just urge the committee to realize that, I mean, this does have a fundamental impact. And on top of that, that's 75 to 80 jobs that weren't created until they showed up. And did we get the deal done? Yes, we did. But it wasn't without having to potentially almost lose the deal to a neighboring state. So, again, thank you very much for the opportunity to share some of these stories, and appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Catnaugh.
Can I clarify one thing? Just
Representative Gomez?
I'm sorry, but this doesn't increase the levy, right? It freezes the rate. So it's I mean, I understand your point, it all stands, but I just wanted to clarify that piece of it, that this doesn't increase the levy.
Representative Gomez, it does freeze the rate.
Right.
And so any increase in taxes would come from market value increases.
Yeah, so as businesses thrive, then our state thrives from this approach. It doesn't increase the levy. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kent. Mr. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, committee members, again, Kevin Lewis with BOMA, Building Owners and Managers Association. And Phil very well stated what's at risk here is our property owners and management companies and the brokers that represent them. Their task is to make sure all buildings are 100% occupied with businesses of all makes. And this could be Minneapolis, Duluth, Clearbrook, Minnesota, any spot on the state of Minnesota map. And we do believe, and I go back to the tenants and how crucial they are to fill all those buildings so Congress can
can grow. We do feel that that this is still a burden, an undue burden, so we respectfully disagree with what's being proposed here in that it would affect a number of businesses. Greater MSB is an organization, as you know, their task is try to bring in new businesses, grow local businesses as well, and clearly the statistics that, they show, and Ms. Cadoon also highlighted, that it is an obstacle to acquire new businesses, grow local businesses, and that when the cost of business keeps rising in that regard. So some of the statistics that are out there that show that though we are a successful state, there's still a large margin that could make us a more successful state. We do feel that that this would put it, again, on an undue financial burden on any size tenant in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Mr. Lewis, thank you so much. Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
Please
say your name. Please proceed.
Jill Larson, Minnesota Business Partnership. I echo the previous comments. You know, Minnesota is already an outlier when it comes to business property tax, especially when we're talking about the state levy. I don't think very few states, if any, have something like this. I understand that it was done many years ago as a kind of a switch, and CI rates did get compressed. Residential rates did as well. And so, as was said, if we are looking for businesses to expand here, locate here, expand their footprint here, this, we feel like this is going in the wrong direction. I liken this to several years ago on a bipartisan basis, this legislature moved the way that we tax corporate income from property, payroll, and sales to sales only. So a business under the old system was essentially punished by adding people here, payroll, or adding property. And so the legislature, in their wisdom, came together. I think the former tax chair, Lynn Chesky, was one of the authors, along with tax chair Davids, to say we're only going to tax businesses here based on their sales. So that was really good for Minnesota homegrown businesses, and that's been a good thing for Minnesota. This statewide general levy is almost sort of serving as a same disincentive that our old corporate tax did, because if you add property here, if you expand your footprint here, which typically means you expand your payroll here, you will pay a lot more in tax. So that's where our concern with this. So we feel like this is kind of going in the opposite direction from the bipartisan changes that were made to the state levy in 2017. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At this time, is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against House File 1410 that's in the audience? All right, members. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I was listening to testifying and listening to Representative Gomez talk about the benefit of this program and how that this requires us to freeze the rate in order for us to provide for education and all the other services, I think at least I see a kind of a flaw in that logic because that's not the only property tax that they pay. They also pay the educational property taxes for that are levied at the local level, et cetera, on top of high increase of corporate income tax as well. And so they're already getting kind of a pound of flesh taken from them. And there's one other category in here that hasn't represented. They just don't really have a lobbying, and that's the seasonal recreational homes that are also having to pay property tax. And they are dealing with things in which they can't even come to the board hearing and really talk about the level of income tax that they have. So there's no truth in taxation for commercial property tax either, other than this body here. And we're hearing from them saying, look, this is an unfair tax, and that we shouldn't be doing this because we're already paying more than our fair share for all of these services. And can't the, in my opinion, I'm going to put some words in their mouths a little bit, can't you figure out how to fund those without having to get more dollars from us in efficient policies and procedures? So I really think this is the wrong direction to go because I believe they're already paying high taxes already and need to have some breaks here.
Yeah, Representative Petersburg, you bring up Representative Gomez.
I just wanted to clarify that this doesn't impact the the seasonal recreational. This is just for commercial industrial, but your other points are well taken. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering if Mr. Swanson can answer a question. As I'm looking at the bill summary, where it shows the general tax history starting in 2013, so the rate being paid was 52.5% in 2013, and then it continues to trend downward to where we are in 2019 at 42.4%. Mr. Swanson, will that continue? Will that rate continue to trend downward as it has in the last 7 years?
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Becker Finn, are you referring to this under current law or under the bill language?
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we don't do anything, where will that trend go?
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and members, currently the levy is frozen at that $784 million that you see at the bottom of the bill summary. So as long as the base continues to increase, that rate would continue to trend downward. And that base is really just it's the property value of commercial industrial property. So if property values continue to increase, then that rate would continue to decrease because the levy doesn't move.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Swanson. And then I also just wanted to thank Representative Gomez for bringing this forward. And you had mentioned paying for our schools. And so just kind of wanted to remind people of, you know, especially, you know, anyone in the audience, that it is our duty under the Constitution, Article 3, Section 1, for a uniform system of public schools. The stability of a Republican form of government depending mainly upon the intelligence of the people, it is the duty of the legislature to establish a general and uniform system of public schools. The legislature shall make such provisions by taxation or otherwise. And so just wanted to make that point that it is the duty of the legislature. We cannot push that duty onto our local school districts and cities to pay for that uniform system of education. It's, you know, we all take a, we're all, it's our duty to uphold what it says in the Constitution, and the Constitution specifically speaks to taxation. So wanted to make that point, you know, and kind of, it's kind of interesting to me who the testifiers are that are here, because the folks who are going to benefit the most from something like this are our kids, and they're in school right now. And so I wanted to thank you for bringing this forward. I think it's an important discussion that we have. Thanks. Thank you.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Gomez, thanks so much for the donuts. I'd like to get the address.
Absolutely.
Where you got those. They're just amazing.
They're old school, right?
The one with all sprinkly things on
thank
top.
Thank you, Representative Gomez.
But I was just thinking, just because values go up doesn't mean businesses are thriving. We're hearing that when businesses thrive, everybody thrives. It's like saying that an elderly lady in Edina that bought her house 50 years ago for $10,000 is thriving when now the value is $2 million and she just lost the house because of the property taxes. So, or like saying that farm values in my area, farm values go up, corn and milk prices go down, and the folks that are really doing well are the auctioneers because they're not in business anymore. That doesn't help any of the children whatsoever. So values going up does not correlate with thriving. This is, members, let's just be clear, very clear. This is a massive regressive tax on the poorest of the poor. I hope the committee will show mercy on the poor. The only ones thriving in this situation are the states of Wisconsin, North and South Dakota, and Iowa. That's who's going to be thriving if this bill were to become law.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know it's easy to think of the state general levy as sort of an extra tax, but it really, when it was created before I was elected, and maybe there's someone around the table who was here in 2001 when Governor Ventura kind of redid all of the levy and state obligations.
Representative Loeffler, I think there's four of us.
Are there really?
There in 2001 that are at the table.
Well, we
appreciate
having some
people. That was my first year
people.
In the legislature, so.
Wow.
Let's go back further.
Representative Loeffler, please.
Well, you're also young in spirit. I just didn't think you'd gone back that far. But the reality was that it was, as I understand, it was imposed to just avoid a windfall break for businesses, and we couldn't afford to give it to homeowners in the same way, and it was to keep the tax base and the revenues kind of constant. And since that time, it's grown less than local levies, so that portion of their tax base grow less fast than others. And it seems to me that freezing the levy at its current value is a way to, again, continue to protect them from what is the average growth in levies across the state for this portion of their tax bill. And I think that's a fair trade-off in recognition of their contribution to our communities, but also saying that, you know, costs do go up over time, and everybody in the community has to share in that a little bit. But by freezing the rate, I think it's actually going to go up less than it would in other ways.
Representative Hertoff.
Thank you, Mrs. Chair. And Representative Gomez, how will this tax help all of the border districts around the state that are really struggling with competition right across the state line? We've got areas like La Crescent. We've got Fargo-Moorhead. I had a chance to be in Fargo-Moorhead area and noticed how thriving it is on the other side of the river, where there are plywood on some of the windows and storefronts in the Moorhead side. How is making the taxes higher in Minnesota going to make it more competitive and allow the thriving that we're talking about in terms of wanting to really, if you think about creating competition and creating more jobs and more business locations, you'll have greater tax capacity by virtue of competition. Because if somebody else decides to compete with you, now they're operating in a commercial property that will be fully assessed at a commercial rate. So tell me how that's going to help.
Representative Gomez, and maybe Representative Lean could also refer a little bit on what happens on border cities, but Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. I'm aware of those issues that border cities face. I do, and we might have a disagreement on this, but I do believe that, part of the beauty of our state is that we do make investments in people. We make investments in our schools. We make investments in our elders, that we make investments in healthcare, right? So to me, it's the idea that we should. I mean, because there's trade-offs, right? So when we cut taxes, then that means that we cut the investments that we make in the people of Minnesota, and so to me, that's the most important, our kind of human capital. Right, and developing that is the most important thing that we can do as policymakers and as lawmakers.
And Representative Hurdos, you've got the floor, but you may come. Representative Lean, there's the disparity reduction credit that would play into this along the border, at least along the Fargo-Moorhead area. You would still have the floor, but Representative Lean, do you want to
talk about how that works? Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we do have that disparity reduction credit. We do have another program that specifically helps out five of the border cities along the Minnesota-Dakota border. But, I mean, just anecdotally, it's like, yes, Fargo is a larger city than Moorhead. Grand Forks is a larger city than East Grand Forks. But things have been happening in Moorhead. I know you refer to some of those older buildings, boarded-up windows and everything. There has been some revitalization in downtown Moorhead lately, though. We have been seeing newer developments going up. Now, that border city program, it does help offset some of those disparities, but the way Minnesota's been operating and the way the game plan has been for the state, it's been successful. I mean, we have a pretty good business community here. We have a pretty strong business community in Minnesota, and we have to pay for those things. I mean, we can take a look at some of the local levies. We can take a look at some of the levies on statewide commercial industrial buildings, but at the end of the day, this money's got to come from somewhere. We've got to have these strong schools that businesses rely on. I mean, when I talk with businesses around the state, their main concern that I hear, at least, is not taxes. It's about where are the workers. We have all these jobs right here, right now, that we can't fill, and we need well-educated workers with the skill sets, with the degrees to fill those jobs. And this is, you know, I think one way we can do that, along with some of the local taxes, some of the local levies and things that have to be a part of the equation. But we have to have a balanced equation here. And so I think, you know, like I say, the way Minnesota's been operating, we have a, you know, we have a game plan that works for us. And so there are things we can do to help some of the local economies that have some of those unique challenges. But overall, you know, I think things have been pretty good in Minnesota. Certainly things are good in Moorhead.
So Representative Herthaus, what I did there, and Chair Davids, is I extended where you name somebody. Now if you name their city, they also get to respond. So I added a corollary to that. So that's Representative Herthaus, you've got the...
Well, thank you, and I didn't expect to hear a campaign speech on border cities. But anyway, that being said, you know, we've talked about fairness and uniformity. And frankly, if there's fairness and uniformity, we shouldn't be saying, okay, well, we're all going to pay a state general levy, but you folks out on the edge of town, on the edge of the state line, don't have to. Why do we need to have legislation to exempt them from the same types of burdens that other businesses who aren't close to the borders? I mean, we understand why we do it, because it's a competitive thing, but unfortunately, those who aren't next to the border don't get this relief from this type of legislation. Secondly, with regard to uniformity, and there was a little bit of touching on when this began, and I believe it was my high school colleague, Ron Abrams, was chair of this tax committee back when this happened. I was paying attention as a business owner what was going on at the legislature. I wasn't here then, but I recall that it was my recollection, it was more to address a budget shortfall. And had to come up with a way to fill a gap of about $500 million. And so this was supposed to be a temporary tax. And, of course, we know in Minnesota that temporary taxes really aren't temporary taxes. They tend to last for a long time if they never go away. This has been a bad plague on business. If we're really talking about fairness and uniformity and about a uniform system of education, if you're going to take that to the tax level as an argument, then we shouldn't have all these class rates. We shouldn't have 55 classifications of property. We should have all of the property have skin in the game on an equal level if we're going to have a uniform system of funding education. But that's why that debate started back in 2001. It was the state taking over some responsibility for state funding and state education. So this is something that we really need to put a damper on, and that's why I've been so active for this seventh year now on state general levy. It's a bad plague, and it is doing nothing to increase our business competitiveness. It's doing nothing to make businesses thrive, and it is particularly in rural Minnesota. It's a amount of money that is just plucked right off a main street and sent to St. Paul, and very little of it really comes back to your own community. So let's keep it local. If the schools need more, and these businesses are paying to their local school districts as well, everybody would be better served if we could phase this out. And it takes a while, I understand, but increasing the levy and increasing the inflator is not the solution. I noticed that the little chart that was provided doesn't go back as far as in the beginning, but we're at about $1.8 billion of tax capacity with regard to commercial. And even applying a modest rate of inflation or percent increase, by my calculations, removing this inflator putting the inflator back on, as this bill proposes to do, is going to start rolling in another $38 to $40 million a year into the general fund. And there's no guarantee that the money coming to the general fund comes back to uniform education. There's all sorts of other programs. In a time of surplus, in a time in which we've got our budget reserve account is fully funded or nearly fully funded, over $2 billion there, $300 million in the cash account, a projected surplus. We'll get an update today, I understand, today or tomorrow.
Yeah,
you know, the other revenues that are there, this is not the right thing to do for our business community. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry to be a little bit late. I was burning the midnight oil here until about 11:30 and haven't had enough coffee this morning, but I keep hearing people talk about this bill and saying it's an increase in the levy, but we're freezing the rate. It's not increasing the levy. And, you know, it's, you know, we've been hearing a lot of talk about, we've heard about the border cities, but equal and equity are not the same thing, and there's plenty of other areas in our law where we do things to level the playing field, to make it more equitable, which doesn't always mean equal. So just to throw that out there, a little education term. And then also it's been said, too, that and pointed out at this table that values aren't always a good indicator of success, and they change, and they might not be as stable. But we also know that we get what we pay for. So, and everybody in the state has to do their job to get what they pay for, to get our good education system. And setting a rate seems to be a more fair way. My question, and I don't know who I would direct this question to, so if we're talking about a rate, and if the big consternation is where the rate's set, what rate would you be happy with? So I don't know if that's just a statement or a question anybody could answer. Thank you.
Chair Davids.
Can you please clarify that this does raise the levy? It freezes the rate, but it raises the levy. If you could clarify.
Well, it freezes, absolutely, it freezes the rate, and so as the market value would go up, it would increase the amount of property taxes paid. That's correct. And that's, and Chair Davids, I mean, that's what we see in the revenue.
Yeah, it raises revenue, but it doesn't raise the levy as such.
So, well, yeah, I think it might be a matter of semantics, levy or property taxes, and the fact that the rate is frozen is now dependent upon the market value of the property. So if the property goes up, if it raises market value, it would increase taxes. If it happened to go down, it would decrease.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the clarification. I know I did marry a math teacher for a reason, but I do understand basic math. So it is the fact that we're not raising the levy, but we're freezing the rate with this bill. So just that's being correct. Very specific, thank you.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just kind of confused, Mr. Chair, because we keep talking about funding education. So is this going to the general fund, or is this going to some special revenue fund that I'm not aware of for education? Because we've talked a lot about funding education, but if it's in the general fund, it really could just go anywhere.
Yeah. Representative O'Neill, it would go to the general fund.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, if it goes into the general fund, then, like I said, it could go. You know, I serve on six committees, and every single committee there is a pretty substantial ask from every agency to increase their budget. So, like corrections, for example, they're asking for 120 new officers, and it's about a $50 million ask just for corrections alone. So it could go really, really anywhere, not just education. Would that be accurate?
Representative O'Neill, that's accurate. I mean, if it was to go back to the general fund and being spent generally as it is now, 41% would go to E through 12 education, another 8% would go to higher education, 30% health and human services, another 8% the property tax aids and credits. So, you know, so a good portion, almost 50%, if it was normally distributed, would go out to education through college. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that, so we need to be careful, you know, which words we use and what we're talking about, because it's been framed like, literally I was sitting here confused, like, does this actually go into some special fund that I don't know about that it's going to fund education? Because that was really the impetus, I guess, behind wanting to do this. And we need to be careful with what words we say. Thank you.
Representative Gomez. Any comments on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, I just wanted to clarify that the reason for framing the discussion in that way is because of the origin of the state general levy. And so that's the reason that I'm talking about it in this way, is because it was at the time, I mean, the general education levy went into a dedicated fund, and when that was repealed, this was sort of conceived of as a replacement for that. And so I understand your point about it, you know, that it doesn't go into a dedicated fund right now. But you know, kind of like if we either, you know, if we take off the inflator, which or we continue without inflation, which was a result of the 2017 bill, or we, you know, we don't somehow make that up, that it does create, you know, to Chair David's point, it creates a $40 million hole in the general fund. And the origin of this really was to address that we were taking away that dedicated fund for education. And so I understand your point, but I don't think it's improper to kind of talk about it in terms of education, given the origin of the general levy. But
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if we're going to talk about where the money is going to go, we need to be clear that it's going into the general fund, which goes everywhere. So to say that this is a directly, the way that it was framed was almost like this is directly funding schools, but it's directly going into the general fund, which funds everything. So words are very important, and we want to make sure that the public knows what this bill is and what it does. We need to be very, very clear. So I would just point that out, that you need to be very clear. And, you know, I've been here for a while, and I'm literally thinking, did we just create a special revenue fund I don't know about? So if I'm confused, I don't think it's fair to bring that confusion to the public as well.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we hear a lot about, well, we're up here at the Capitol, we're about investing in people, and that, you know, somehow that gives us a little bit more of a perception about what is best for people, et cetera. But, you know, I'm going to tell you that there's somebody out there that invests in people that would make our investment pale in comparison, and that is the employers. And here we're talking about the employers. They invest in people heavily. And if we continue to reduce their profitability and reduce their availability for providing jobs, that investment goes down substantially, even more so than anything that we can do to replace that. And so I just want us to be careful not to say that, hey, we're investing in people, so therefore we need to take more from the businesses and organizations that are actually really investing in people, and because that's counterintuitive, I believe it is. And when we talk about the fact that we need this type of property tax at the state level in order to fund the programs we have, then how come I don't see any bills for putting the state property tax back on residences? I mean, if we can do it for businesses, why can't we do it for residences, right? I mean, we used to years ago. So why not? Well, it's because there really isn't any reason for the state to have property tax values, because we're already collecting sales tax, we're collecting income tax, we're collecting all the other taxes that we do. Estate taxes, when you die, sick tax now, we're going to be putting that back in. We have the ability to collect taxes all over the place. We don't really need to have this anymore. And I think it's time for us to allow the real driver of the economy, which is the business, to let them open up the throttle and actually improve rather than always restrict them. So, Mr. Chair, I would certainly not agree with this particular bill. Thank you.
You know, we talked a lot about the tax bill of 2001, and that's when this started. And, you know, Chair David's and Chair Carlson and Chair Erickson, we were all around at the time, and there's a number of things done. You know, the general ed levy was taken away.
That's right.
And at that time, the way that worked is that a school district had to set a rate that was determined by the state. In the last year, it was at 32.4%. So whatever that raised, then the difference to get to your general ed formula, the state would come on and cover. And so wealthy districts, they paid it all in property taxes. And the lower-based ones at 32.4 would bring in here and the state would come in. And at that time, it was about $1.3 billion. And so part of it is we took that out of there. We had to replace some of it. So I think this probably was part of it. But also what they did is they compressed the rates at the time. So like on commercial industrial at over 150,000 that year, they went from 3.4 to the existing 2.0. And at the less than 150,000, they went from 2.4 down to 1.5. So that was about a 40% decrease. So I think part of the mix was, you know, while we're doing this, businesses would have had about a 40% decrease. So this idea, and I don't know if there's any great long-term thought in any of it, was to kind of replace some of these dollars and probably that was being taken out of education, but also to somehow mitigate this huge compression of the classification rates. But what's happened, so I went back and looked at the data, and so since 2002 to 2017, the last year the statewide levy was, before it was frozen, that had increased in those 15 years by 46%, by $592 million to about $863, 46%. Business overall from 02 to 17, commercial industrial increased 68% property taxes. But residential homestead increased 111% in that same 15 years, and farmland, even though it's starting to go down now with some of the things that have been done, increased from actually $212 million to $617 315%. So just kind of looking at it, it does become a little more difficult to justify freezing a part of a rate for CI when, you know, you've got the farmers and seniors and working families that are seeing much greater increases in property taxes in the last 15 years. So I just, and if anyone wants to respond to that, we're certainly open to that. But I just think there's kind of a fairness thing when you kind of look overall at kind of the property tax system. Do we freeze a certain part here or there when other areas are increasing quite rapidly for seniors and working families and farmers? So Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very interesting discussion, and I'm glad I'm on the Tax Committee. I thought it was going to be boring, but it's not. You know, so much goes on with regards to business taxes. You know, we've talked about Fargo-Moorhead. I go back to Fargo-Moorhead in the early 60s, okay? That's when I first came there, okay? Battled, put sandbags up in 1965 and many times since. And when I first moved to Fargo-Moorhead in the early 60s, there really wasn't much difference between Fargo and Moorhead. And I know I'm older than you are, Chair Marquardt, but I'm sure that you've seen how things have grown on the west side of the river. So, and I think because of that, when Representative Lean talks about disparity and border cities legislation, I simply have to ask the question, why was that put there? Why did the disparity and the border cities legislation come to be? Well, I think we know why. And so then we heard about the number of cities that are involved in that. What I'm concerned about, listen, I watch people from my part of the state go to Grand Forks way too often, okay, to shop. I am a small town Main Street business supporter, and I love the hardware stores in Roseau and so forth. But all the, you can make a case for the border cities and the disparity. All that's doing, not all, one of the things it may be doing is just moving the border further east. Because if you happen to be the next city outside of that disparity border cities area, now you're competing against mm-hmm. Moorhead. And that might be Hawley mm-hmm. or so forth. Or you might be Crookston. I don't think that Crookston is in that mix.
I don't think so.
No.
You know, so now Crookston is competing against East Grand Forks. And all we're doing is just moving that border, in this case, further east. In terms of valuation, I have a really good friend who owns a little convenience store, gas station, bait shop, and whatever. And his property taxes this year went up about 100% because the valuations changed. Okay? And folks, there's no way in the world that that little convenience store is going to be sold for anywhere near what it's valued at. And the guy just got done spending $200,000 replacing his fuel tanks because the MPCA said they had to be replaced. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that can we please have some empathy for these small town business owners and these people who are working hard to keep the doors open and keep the plywood off the windows and keep their tax revenue going to our local schools and roads and all that kind of stuff. I strongly disagree with the argument that this bill is not going to raise taxes. I just believe that it will. And to say anything else, I just think is inaccurate. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your tolerance.
Thank you. We've got one person on the list, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I certainly would never want to disagree with the chair nor his statistics, because, first of all, I think your statistics are accurate. I think we have had seen explosive increases in property taxes and so forth, but I would offer a little bit different interpretation of those facts and really put forth what we have on the table here, which is dealing with the state property tax side of that. And of all those tax increases, the only one that this bill and what the state imposes is on CI property and seasonal recreational properties. And to even point it even farther, because of those increases in the statistics that you said, we have been putting back LGA and county state aid in order to help keep property taxes low, and we've been increasing that every year, and yet property taxes continue to rise. And so there certainly is a disconnect there between what the state can do for property taxes that are levied at the local level and what we can do here at the state. And so as a state, what I'm saying is that we need to help businesses and others out there in order to invest back into the community by making them more productive and more profitable. And we can do that at the state level by saying we can be more efficient here at the state so that we don't need to really collect these taxes. And so, Mr. Chair, thank you for kind of showing how our property tax has really gotten out of whack. It's not an awful lot that we can do here because it's local levies that are set, but whatever we can do is helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good. And I'm going to go to Representative Gomez for the final word because we've got a couple more bills left.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank everybody for the respectful and robust discussion today. I think that you know, I mean, to the representative's point, if we municipalities aren't raising local property taxes for any reason other than that they have things to pay for, right? And so if we create a hole by, you know, getting rid of the inflator or cutting the levy here, then it just shifts it onto another source of revenue. And so, you know, I think that that freezing the rate is the right thing that we can do to kind of fulfill the promise that was made at the origin of this revenue source, and to ensure fairness among the different classes of properties that pay into create the good life that we have here. So, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just renew my motion to consider House File 1410 to be laid over for consideration for inclusion in the omnibus.
Representative Gomez renews her motion to lay over House File 1410 for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill. Members, thank you so much. And while Representative Davids is coming forward,
Mr. Chair, yes. We have Representative Vogel maybe to go before me. If we can go out of order, just as a courtesy.
That is great.
I'm going to be here. I would not miss a second of this meeting.
Very good. Representative Vogel, if you'd move forward. And also, if those who are back in 2001 remember, there was, and this I had to look up, but there was a sales tax rebate that year, too, another Jesse check. It was done by sales tax. It was like $790 million. So, I mean, how could you vote against a bill like that? I think everyone here that could have voted probably for that bill back in 2001.
Mr. Chair, right Chair Davis. The election, I volunteered to take the state postage and take those checks door to door.
I bet you did.
Servant's heart.
Chair David, would you like to move that bill instead of passing those checks around? Would you like to move a bill here? All right. Representative Chair David's moves House File 1478 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Representative Vogel, thank you so much. Please proceed with your bill, and I know you have a testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Davids, for suggesting we move a little in the agenda here. This is actually kind of like Groundhog Day a month later. The bill has been around for quite some time and actually was in the omnibus tax bill that got vetoed last year. So I've resubmitted the bill for consideration, and I appreciate you hearing it. I do have the city administrator here from the city of Elko Newmarket who can better explain the rationale behind it, if that would be okay.
That would be great. Mayor, welcome. Please state your name and please see Proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tom Terry. I'm the city administrator for the city of Elko New Market. We are requesting House File 1478. It provides for the retroactive sales tax exemption for the materials, equipment, and supplies that were required for the construction of a water treatment facility. This water treatment facility was constructed to address levels of radium in the water for the city of Elko New Market in order to meet water quality standards. This was a public health issue. The compliance agreement with the Minnesota Department of Health stipulated the construction of a centralized water treatment facility. The debt that we issued for this project was $8.6 million with a total material cost of approximately $3.9 million. At the end of the day, this resulted in an over $20 per month increase in our local residents' utility bills in order to pay for this facility. The tax reimbursement, if received, would be used to help stabilize the city's utility rate fund and help us control rates for our residents going forward who are already paying some of the highest utility rates within the region, due in large part to this facility. We are looking for that retroactive sales tax exemption from the committee. I would stand for any questions.
Barry, any questions for Mr. Terry? If not, is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 1478? See none. Members, any questions or comments for either Mr. Terry or the author? See none. Representative Vogel, any closing comments?
Thank you.
Very good. Chair Davids renews his motion to lay over House File 1478 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt.
Chair Davids, welcome.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I move House File 1491 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
So moved. Please proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This House File 1491 was brought to me by the Koch brothers, Alec, and the Center for American Experiment. Mr. Chair, it's a different bill I have.
Very good.
I'm sorry.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill was brought to me by the Minnesota Snowmobilers Association, and this was in the tax bill last year. It removes the sales tax from construction materials. I have with me someone to answer any questions which you have. It's very straightforward. Nonprofit snowmobile clubs would not have to pay sales tax on their construction materials. And I have as a resource if we need them. I know we're late in the day. If there's any questions. If there's any questions, ask me. If there's any tough ones, I have Mr. Doug Fransinger.
So Mr. Chair, is it just materials or anything dealing like, let's say, grooming or anything, materials or equipment you would need for that? And so if you please state your name.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Doug Fransinger. I represent the Minnesota United Snowmobilers Association. And this, the exemption would apply simply to building construction materials and signposts. For example, if the snowmobile club has to replace a bridge when they go and buy the lumber, this would be tax exempt, or the metal rebar, those types of things that are for the maintenance and development of snowmobile trails only. I could talk for a half an hour about snowmobiling and why it's important.
An hour.
But, Mr. Chairman, at least one person on the committee has been out in the snowmobile at least once this year. We've had a bountiful year. I like to say we're blessed with snow this year. Not everybody feels this way, but our resort industry, as well as the automobile body shops, believe that. It is a blessing. But if you have resorts in your district, please ask them about the public benefit of snowmobiles. We are volunteers. This is not a for-profit thing for us, and that we developed and maintain over 20,000 miles of snowmobiles, trails within the state of Minnesota, and the economic impact of that is phenomenal.
Mr. Franzen, thank you. We may be grooming trails until June this year. So it's... Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. So I have a snowmobile club in the Mille Lacs area that has applied for a grant to build a new bridge. Will that be covered if this becomes law as far as the exemption on the sales tax on the...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, as I understand the bill, and I've looked at it a lot, yes. A new bridge, you know, if it is a grant and aid snowmobile club with the DNR, the DNR has to approve it. Folks can't just go off building stuff willy-nilly. If it's truly for the maintenance and development of a snowmobile trail, yes, the materials would be tax exempt.
Thank you, Mr.
Ms. Dalton is also nodding her head affirmatively on that also. Thank you. Any other Representative Fabian?
Imagine that.
Do you know anything about snowmobiles up there?
Well, a little bit, yeah. So, Chair Davids and all the members of the committee, I'm happy to be a co-author on the bill. I think this is awesome. And I want to extend to all of you, one of the greatest snowmobile events of the year is taking place this weekend on Lake of the Woods in the Northwest Angle. The Northwest Angle Edge Riders are having their annual fundraiser, and I plan to be there. And I've got some extra sleds if people want to come on up and go with me. I'm going to leave tomorrow, and we're going to have a great time.
Very good.
So, Mr. Chair, thank you. And the bridge that we have from Warroad up to the Oak Island is only about 40 miles, but it's an ice bridge this year, just so you know.
Thank you much.
Sales tax exempt.
There, yeah, I suppose it would be, yes. Anyone else? Chair Davids, any closing comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'd renew my motion that House File 1491 be labeled for possible inclusion at the end of the omnibus tax bill.
Chair Davids renews his motion to lay over House File 1491 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Very good. Thank you much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I have been asked about when are we going to hear the governor's bill. It is not going to be next week. It's going to be the following week, so the week of March 12th. And so my thoughts are on that Tuesday to hear the bill.
Maybe the ice.
And then if members have specific questions on the bill, and then on Wednesday have testifying almost the whole day, and then when that's complete, we'll have discussion. And then on that can go into Thursday, and then after that's completed, that Thursday of that week, we'll do the very exciting policy technical bill that I know people will be waiting for. So members, thanks for your work again. Have a good weekend. We are adjourned.